480. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of the Spurscast. I do not have a guest lined up for this episode because of some unforeseen circumstances came up between the guest and myself, where we're going to have to reschedule that guest at a later time. But so I'm going to go ahead and go through this episode solo. This is, I think, my second or third episode doing it solo, so I try to keep the pace pretty well because I know I can sometimes go a little too quick whenever I'm by myself because all the dead silence. It's weird. But let's go to get into this Spurscast episode 480. So let's first begin with some general thoughts over the Spurs' last four games. You know, last week I had Project Spurs' Steven Anderson on the episode, and we both projected the Spurs to go 2-2. Now, we were both right. They did go 2-2, but the losses were a little bit different than we had both thought. So first, the Spurs played at Toronto on Friday, and they lost that game by 3 points. You know, they actually held the Raptors, one of the better offensive teams in the league, their top 10 offense, to 86 points. But that game just shows you that the Spurs' offense is just so bad right now because they can hold somebody at 86 and still lose a game. So Steven and I had that one penciled as a loss, and the Spurs did lose. Then on Sunday, the Spurs hosted the Indiana Pacers, and they ended up losing that game by 8 points. Something significant in that game was that Coach Popovich made DeJounte Murray the starter kind of in a quiet fashion where there wasn't really a lot of those of us at the game, the media, should I say, we were kind of wondering, is Tony Parker sitting tonight? You know, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden Parker checks in at the 6 minute mark to play as off the bench. And it wasn't until after the game that Parker said that Pop told him it's time, like, you know, it's time to give the keys over to the young kid, DeJounte Murray, to take over, kind of what Tony did when he was 19. So the Spurs did lose that game to the Pacers by 8 points. That was a game that Steven and I both had thought they would win, and they ended up losing that one. Then on Tuesday, the Spurs hosted the Cleveland Cavaliers. Spurs won that game by 12 points. So Steven and I were off there. We both thought they'd lose that game. But, I mean, we didn't realize the Cavs were really, really in that much trouble, especially defensively. I mean, the Spurs are as I mentioned, they couldn't even beat the Raptors by holding the Raptors to 86. And all of a sudden, against the Cavs are so bad defensively, the Spurs had 63 points on them without Kawhi Leonard by halftime. So San Antonio got a good win there. And at that point, Pops kept the system of having Murray start and Tony come off the bench. Then on Wednesday, in a back-to-back without LaMarcus Aldridge, who was out for rest, the Spurs went into Memphis on the road on the second out of back-to-back, and they beat them by 23 points. Now, obviously, the Grizzlies aren't a great team right now. You know, they're injured a lot up and down the roster. Their situation with some of the players that they've paid in the offseason has not panned out, and they don't look good even financially going into next season with that roster that they've put together. So the Spurs ended up beating them by 23. Pau Gasol was one assist shy of a triple-double. But, you know, without Aldridge, the Spurs still got another win. So, so they did finish 2-2 over the last four games. Let's take a quick look at the state of the Spurs, where they're at right now. You know, right now they're 32-18 as I record this on Wednesday evening. Thursday evening. I have my days mixed up. Which is third in the Western Conference. You know, for a while there, the Minnesota Timberwolves took that third spot, but then the Wolves lost themselves. So, I mean, San Antonio's going to kind of stay afloat right now, it looks like. And they're beating some teams, like they beat Cleveland, they beat Memphis. So especially against the bad teams, that's kind of what they've needed, is to get some wins against some of the bad teams like Memphis. And that's something they hadn't been doing when they had suffered some losses to like the Hawks and the Lakers in the past few weeks. Offensively, the Spurs still have their issues. They're 17th in the league, 104.7 points per 100 possessions. Defensively, they're still elite, holding teams to 100.5 points per 100, second in the league, just right behind Boston. And again, that's very remarkable for them, considering they've only had Kawhi Leonard available for 9 games. Some news that came out about one of their players, LaMarcus Aldridge, was named an All-Star Reserve, which isn't surprising, earlier this week. And then right before I got on to record the Spurs cast, LeBron James, who has Team LeBron, actually picked Aldridge as one of his players on his team. So, you know, social media, everyone's like, this is a sign that LeBron wants to come to San Antonio and all these different things. So there's actually be a question later on in the episode about the chances of LeBron coming to San Antonio. And I kind of want to get into that question a little bit later, because I go a little bit further financially into what the Spurs need to do to make that happen. Now, I'm not obviously, it's really early. We don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, again, I'll go back into the whole LeBron thing when we get to that question later on in this episode. So let's first begin with our first topic of the day, which was, you know, usually when I cover the San Antonio Spurs, this is now year six for me. I've been doing, you know, it's been a fun job working with ProjectSpurs.com, working with AnalyzingTheLeague.com. And, you know, covering the Spurs, they're usually a pretty quiet team. They like to keep things indoor, you know, behind closed doors and any kind of rumors. You know, it's very rare to see any kind of turmoil within the franchise. And, you know, last week there's that whole episode of Pop, you know, telling reporters that, you know, at one time this summer, Aldridge came up to him and told him, you know, he wanted to be traded. So, you know, they obviously had a heart to heart. They resolved the situation. And now you see that it's panned out well for Popovich, the Spurs, and Aldridge, because he's not only got the contract extension for his future in San Antonio, but he's back to his playing level. He's comfortable. He's playing great basketball. He's an all-star again. Now, the latest thing that happened was the Kawhi Leonard whirlwind. So let's kind of just take you through this whole process of how this all happened, and then I'll give you some thoughts on what this means for the Spurs right now and for Kawhi right now going forward. So on Monday, the ESPN.com puts out an article from Adrian Wojnarowski, Michael Wright, who's the beat writer for ESPN in San Antonio, and then Zach Lowe contributed to that report. So they basically use words like sources are telling them that Kawhi's been very distant and disconnected from the Spurs this season. They say it's mainly because of the injury situation. R.C. Buford in that piece rejected these rumors. He basically said that Kawhi and the Spurs have been fine. You know, he did admit that both sides, the Spurs and Kawhi, are frustrated about this whole quad injury, this tendinopathy that just hasn't been able to heal the right way where he can get back into playing. They've obviously had to shut him down indefinitely. Well, then later on that day on Monday, Jabari Young spoke with Kawhi's uncle, Dennis Robertson. And he basically refuted the report from ESPN, basically saying that, you know, Kawhi and the Spurs have had the same kind of relationship. There's nothing really different. So he kind of deflected that report from ESPN. So then the next morning on Tuesday, Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith have some reporting on their show. I think it's called First Take. I don't watch those shows anymore. Anyway, the clip's all over the internet. So basically, Jalen's big point was that Kawhi wants out of San Antonio. Was his quote there that Kawhi's frustrated because they haven't been able to attract talent over the last summer of the whole injury situation as well. And Stephen A. Smith goes on there. He kind of just says that in the past year they heard rumblings that Kawhi wanted out. He cites Jabari. Obviously, Jabari, you know, still covers the Spurs, and he's very plugged in to the situation. So he cites Jabari, but then he cites Mike Monroe, who's a great, you know, respected reporter. The only thing is who used to write for the Express News. Now I use that word "used to" because Mike actually retired. He doesn't write anymore. You know, I go to all the games, home games at least, and Mike's not there. He you know, he's off in retirement, and so he even you know, I'm sure he didn't know that his name's being leaked here, that he's reporting on Kawhi. So in a way, you know, these ESPN guys, I don't, you know, they're obviously former players. Jalen's a former player. Stevens, you know, obviously been plugged into the league over the years. That's why they have these kind of jobs. But, you know, you got to look at the guys who are, you know, plugged into the team right now. A guy like Michael Wright, a guy like Jabari. Then the guys, the national guys who have input from the league, from their sources, which is like Woj, Zach Lowe, are very plugged in. And then it kind of just deflects the whole thing, because then Stephen A. Smith says that Kawhi's uncle was running the show, and that basically, you know, so it's kind of like Kawhi's uncle tells Jabari one day that Spurs are fine. Then Stephen A. Smith says that the uncle says that he's running the show, and basically from what they're hearing, Kawhi wants out. So, I mean, it's all over the place. And so obviously this was becoming a huge issue. You know, Kawhi's name was trending on Twitter, and you know, so eventually the Spurs were going to have to address it. So they actually did that night before they played the Cleveland Cavaliers on Tuesday. Coach Popovich addressed the situation. You know, he was asked about the Spurs' relationship with Kawhi, and he said, "It's no different than it has been for all the time he's been here." Pop did let out some more info here. He says that he kind of he didn't deliberately say that he confirms it, but he basically said that Kawhi has sought out another opinion on his leg, and that, you know, he says that Kawhi's just doing his due diligence himself and his camp, you know, and that's what they want. The Spurs want him to be back on the court. He says that he wants him to be back on the court. Kawhi wants to be back on the court. Everybody wants Kawhi back on the court. Pop himself admitted frustration that, you know, this is not obviously the way the Spurs planned the season to play out was to have, you know, when this quad injury starts acting up at preseason, they didn't think he'd be out. It's already now February. It's almost February. And the guys, they still don't know when they're going to get Kawhi Leonard back. And then Pop had another quote here that was pretty interesting. Again, this kind of goes back to that whole Stephen A. Smith thing and maybe part of the ESPN reporting as well, where Pop said, "For somebody to come up with something about him and his teammates is just silly." So this is Pop obviously saying that there's no issues between Kawhi and his teammates. You know, this is just kind of, Pop even used the words like writers have to write, basically. You know, he says that the Spurs really don't pay this kind of these kind of rumors any attention in the past, so they're going to make sure not to do that anymore in the future. And then Kawhi basically said, Pop basically said that the Spurs are going to continue to err on the side of caution. You know, he mentioned a familiar example with Tim Duncan when Tim Duncan was held out of a playoff series is because of a knee injury. And, you know, the Spurs aren't just looking at Kawhi for this season to try to get a championship. They're looking at longevity. You know, they want to keep him around. You know, they can offer him the Supermax this summer. And that's obviously a five-year deal that, you know, that's for them as a team, you know, that's their franchise cornerstone player. If he's not 100% and they don't feel like he's ready, their doctors are telling them he's not ready, well, then they're not going to put him out there in the court, even if it means sacrificing this season. That's kind of what you're seeing there from Pop's words. So let's go into some of the financials about what this means for Kawhi. Now, this summer, he's slated to make $20 million, and the next year, he's going to make $21.3 million on his current deal if he opts into that player option, because he does have a player option after this summer. Now, here's the interesting thing. Kawhi Leonard qualified for the Supermax contract, a rare contract, because he made the All-NBA team over the last two seasons. That contract, the Spurs can offer him on July 1st, is a five-year deal worth $219 million. You know, if he signs this deal, let's say the Spurs offer to him and he signs it, then not this coming year, he'll still make $20 million, but next summer, his salary jumps up to $37.8 million. Here's something to remember about this. I spoke with one of the guys who's pretty fluent in the cap situation, salary cap. His name's Cole Zwicker, great writer on Twitter, if you want to follow him for some scouting, for some salary cap breakdowns reporting. And he basically told me was that if the Spurs, I don't think they're going to do this, but let's just say the Spurs did try to move, let's just say Kawhi demanded a trade within the next 15 days, which is when the trade deadline expires. If Kawhi got moved within these next 15 days, he loses out on that Supermax. The receiving team of him, they do not get to offer him that max. It's over, that Supermax. It can only be by the team that he was originally, one of those two, you know, the team that he's been with, which is San Antonio. So even if this drama plays out to the summer, let's say Kawhi pulls like a Kyrie situation where he were to say, I want to be traded. I'm demanding to be traded. Well, if the Spurs moved him again, even in the summer, he loses the Supermax option. So basically, in order to get that Supermax, he needs to stay in San Antonio. And for him, you know, that's the situation is that, you know, the best part right now is that for trying to evaluate this whole situation is that Kawhi hasn't said anything. You know, he's not on the record of saying anything. So, you know, on ESPN side, obviously they have very good sources plugged in. They're into the league. You know, Woj, Zach Lowe, those are the top cream of the crop kind of reporters. But then, you know, on the Spurs side, they're saying, of course, that everything's fine. There's no issues here. So even if there is issues, you know, as long as Kawhi doesn't get moved over the summer, the Spurs can still offer him that Supermax coming up. And again, he can sign it. That's a lot of money. That's $219 million. So now let's look at the Supermax. The Spurs will basically have right when the offseason starts July 1st until mid-October, I think it's like October 16th, is the date that they have to offer him that deal. Now, that's if they offered to him, you know, if they, I think they will just because of his age, because, you know, this is basically their franchise player. So, you know, there have been some people telling me, well, you know, because of his injury situation, maybe they won't. So, you know, who knows? But for now, I think they would offer it to him. Now, if Kawhi sits on that deal from July to October and he doesn't sign it, then that's a clear sign that he's not just saying he wants out of San Antonio. I mean, it's not for money. He just wants to be out of San Antonio. So obviously he'd just play that final season and become like an expiring contract kind of player where maybe they'd have to look at moving him next season. So that's the most extreme example is that he doesn't sign the Supermax. Now, let's say the Spurs offer it to him. Well, then he can wait on it still up until mid-October like Russell Westbrook just did this past summer, where OKC fans did it really didn't know what was going to happen with Westbrook. They didn't know if he was going to sign it or not, or want to go to LA when he became another free agent. So this whole drama as far as like, not, you know, this whole situation of no clarity could carry on into the summer. Let's just say on July 1st, reports come out that the Spurs did offer Kawhi the Supermax, and then he doesn't sign it initially within the first 10 days or the first month or two. You know, it could look like, oh, maybe he doesn't want out. But again, he has up until mid-October. If he does sign it at that time, he's locked in with San Antonio for 5 more years. But if he doesn't, then hey, you know, that's a sign that he does want out. So this is just something to monitor with Kawhi. If the Spurs didn't offer him the Supermax, I think that they would again. He would actually have to he would have to make the All NBA team next year in order to have that option the following summer. And again, this is just something that you know, a lot of people have written about. People are giving their opinions on this, both for Kawhi's side, for the Spurs' side. So that for the fan base of San Antonio, for you know, obviously the front office doesn't like this kind of, you know, these kind of reports coming out of the Spurs. It's just a different you know, time right now for the Spurs, and you know, the Spurs obviously at least addressed it publicly, so maybe it'll kind of quiet down now, and we'll see what happens going forward. With this whole Kawhi Leonard rumor. And, you know, from my take, it kind of just sounds like the frustration everybody mentioned on all three sides is just that it's just the injury. You know, if his quad just obviously gets back to normal and starts working again, and you know, the therapy starts working for him that he's undergoing with that tendinopathy, then obviously I think a lot of these issues on all three sides get pushed under the rug. I mean, not under the rug, but, you know, just kind of just go away a little bit, because once Kawhi starts playing again and he gets comfortable with his teammates, starts winning ball games, you know, that a lot of the stuff kind of just disappears. So, again, we'll see. We'll figure out what happens with Kawhi going forward. There's a long time, like I mentioned. If the summertime comes, they offer him the Supermax, he doesn't sign it, don't just think that he wants out just yet. You got to wait till that final deadline in mid-October to see if he really is going to sign it or not. Moving on to more actual basketball, not just like rumors, drama. Let's go to the Spurs. As I mentioned, you know, Popovich made a big change on Sunday when he basically gave the starting point guard role to DeJounte Murray. You know, he's basically said that Murray gives them something that they've needed, which is a guy who can push the pace, kind of get the ball moving up and down the floor. He's long defensively, where he can guard a lot of different players out on the wing. It doesn't always just have to be point guards. He's not a liability on defense. That's my words, not Pop's, by the way, on that part. And you know, obviously his rebounding is another skill. You know, he rebounds. He's one of the best rebounders at the point guard position in the NBA. I think he actually is, if I look at the data. Outside of Russ, sorry. I forgot Russ is still playing. So anyway, outside of Russ, Murray's one of the top rebounders in the league. So Murray has so much growth and potential, and Pop sees that, you know, the Spurs need to get younger, get athletic, more athletic to compete into the future. And for Tony Parker's place, you know, he's 36, and this is going to be, so far it's showing that it's a move that's going to be great for him, where he's a little bit fresh, where he doesn't have to play as many minutes. He's only averaging 20 minutes now that he's coming off the bench. He's averaging 12 points, which I'll get into some of the stats here pretty soon. And for him, you know, it's kind of like he's going to get second units. If he is, he can still get some time with Aldridge or Pau Gasol at different times in the games. But, you know, the Spurs on the defensive end, he doesn't always have to guard, you know, the top players at his position, where now that can be kind of be Murray's job. So this is something that I think is going to be more beneficial. And it's obviously a small sample size, but the sample size does show that it's a positive move that Popovich has made here. So since the Spurs moved Murray to the starting lineup, the Spurs are 2-1. Parker's averaging 12.7 points, 5 assists, and 20 minutes, like I mentioned. DeJounte is averaging 12.7 points, 7 rebounds, 4.7 assists, 3.3 steals, and 27.3 minutes. And again, that's big for Murray that he's getting 27.3 minutes. He's finally getting like real minutes here. Popovich even mentioned after their most recent game against the Cavs that he wants Murray in fourth quarters. You know, he wants him out there competing against in crunch time to get that growth, to get that kind of confidence. So that's going to be huge for Murray to start being the Spurs' point guard and down the stretch. And obviously, he has his limitations with his jump shot in crunch time. But defensively, you know, you can switch a 2 or 3. He can help Danny Green. And obviously, when Kawhi Leonard eventually comes back, he can be there as well. So they're going to be when they get their whole team healthy, assuming Kawhi comes back this season, this is going to be a very long three players out on the wing area with Danny, Kawhi, and Murray, especially if DeJounte can actually you know, pick up his defense even more. You saw that he had 7 steals there against the Cavs on Tuesday. One other guy who's benefited from this, who Colin Reed pointed out in his most recent article on ProjectSpurs.com, where you can check that out, is Patty Mills. Since the move was made, Patty Mills is averaging 11.3 points, and he's shooting 40% from three. Now, Colin digs further into the data on this, and basically what he says is that, like, with Parker now by Mills' side, Tony can be the guy running pick and roll. He can be the game manager. Patty Mills can be more comfortable as like that Australian national team version of Patty Mills, where he's more like a two running off screen action, getting way more spot up looks. And so right now it looks like this is also going to benefit Patty. You know, he's had a struggling season so far because he's been asked to do a little bit more than what his role really is at the NBA level. And now that Parker's there to help him out, be that primary ball handler, it's going to help out Patty and be the spot up wing. Just something I want to go over is those three players, Parker, Mills, and Murray. You know, before the switch was made, before Sunday, those three players combined were averaging 24 points and 9.2 assists. Since Pop's made the move in the last three games, they're averaging 36.7 points and 11 assists. So the Spurs go from getting not that much production out of their three point guards to getting, you know, a pretty good stat line there. You know, 36 and 11. Imagine from three players there. So that's a good positive sign for San Antonio. Two things to keep in mind though with that is one, it's a small sample size. You know, it's obviously not that big. And two, it is against two of the bad defensive teams in the league, which is Cleveland and Memphis. You know, they did, even though they started Murray, they did lose to Indiana, and Indiana was a better team overall. So we're not sure just quite yet what it's going to do against some of the top tier teams, what that move looks like, but we will see as the Spurs keep playing. One thing I do want to notice, is for Patty is what's going to happen if a lot of the guys do start coming back. Let's just say, you know, Rudy Gay eventually comes back and Manu Ginobili. Well, then, you know, it gets tough to find Patty some minutes because their starting five are obviously Murray, Danny Green, Kyle Anderson, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Pau Gasol. Coming off the bench now, their sixth man is Tony Parker, then Manu Ginobili at the two, Rudy Gay at the three, and Davis Bertans at the four. And they really don't play LaVern unless like everybody's out. So I kind of see LaVern is out of the rotation, but I see Bertans has earned his way in there. And so the problem becomes, you know, does Brent Forbes not play? And where does Patty play? So Coach Pop could obviously put Bertans like at the backup five and then make Rudy Gay the four and then put Manu up at the three. And that's just something where you do have to question. Maybe, you know, considering he's making $10 million this year and then also, or I think $11 million this year and then also, I think $20 million over the next 2 years or $30 million. Do they move, try to look at seeing what they can, you know, do they make calls on Patty Mills, basically what I'm asking, with these last 15 days. Before the trade, the 14 days before the trade deadline gets here. Cause you know, when everybody's healthy, they're not going to have a lot of minutes. There's going to be some nights where I think Patty may not play as much. And for sure, Brent Forbes probably won't play as much. And even guys like Kyle Anderson, who's found a great role if Kawhi ever comes back, there's going to be some issues there if they do get their team whole, fully healthy. But for now, you know, with the whole Kawhi situation and with Rudy Gay out for weeks, which I'll talk about in a little bit, I guess they're okay, letting Bryn play the backup three and Mills play the backup two until Manu gets back. Let's go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and take a quick break and I will be right back.
This podcast is brought to you by ADT. When it comes to something as important as your family's safety, you need real protection with ADT. What does real protection mean for you? Well, real protection means you can get all of the latest innovation in smart home security from ADT combined with 24/7 monitoring from the most trusted name in home security. You'll get a team of professionals designing and installing a secure smart home just for you, including 18,000 employees safeguarding you and your family, along with a connection to first responders. Your secure smart home includes everything from video doorbells and indoor and outdoor cameras to smart locks and lights controlled from the ADT Go app or the sound of your voice. You can also get professionally monitored carbon monoxide and smoke detectors. Everything is custom designed to fit your home, all from the nation's number one smart home security provider. You can even get safety on the go, in the car, or when the kids are at school with the ADT Go app with an SOS button. Ready to learn more? Visit ADT.com/podcast to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.
Thank you again for tuning in to SpursCast, episode 480. My name is Paul Garcia. I'm doing this episode solo. Let's go ahead and go into our second segment of the SpursCast, which is answering your Spurs Twitter questions using the hashtag SpursCast. Our first question comes from Project Spurs writer Colin Reed, at Colin Reed PS. Colin asks, which bench players do you all think will benefit the most from having Parker run the bench lineups going forward? Well, since I'm the only one here, I guess I have to answer it. So it's a good question from Colin. I think that honestly, like I was looking at the roster of the bench guys, and almost everyone's going to benefit in a way from it, except for maybe a few players here. Let me just tell you what I'm thinking here. Patty Mills, you know, like Colin, like you mentioned in your article, sir, Patty Mills is obviously going to benefit because he doesn't have to be the primary ball handler. You know, he's not as comfortable going into the paint and creating for others. He's going to be more comfortable getting spot up shots, coming off picks, and that's going to be helpful with Parker there. I think Davis Bertans gets a boost because he can run 1-4 pick and rolls, pick and pops with Tony Parker. He can roll and get some rolls and get some dunks like you've seen him do lately. And Parker's a great pick and roll player. Rudy Gay, when he eventually comes back, that's going to be good for him because him and Tony can run a 1-3 or 1-4 pick and roll where Tony can get Rudy to get that switch on the point guard, and then Rudy can get that player in the post, or Rudy can just roll. He can shoot threes. And then Parker, if they go under the screens, he can make the mid-range jumper. So those three players, I think, are going to be okay. Same thing for Brent Forbes also. If he does play more with Parker, Parker's going to open up the lane for him, you know, get him open threes, et cetera. The guy, though, that I'm interested to see is how Tony and Manu work out together, just in the fact that Manu's going to be fine when Tony has the ball because Manu's a good spot-up shooter too. He can shoot the three. But I'm more interested to see what happens when Manu's the ball handler. So Manu does like to run a lot of pick and rolls as a second unit. You know, they depend on him to do that a lot. And what happens, though, you know, with Parker out there, I think that with Patty out there, it works out well for Manu because, you know, Patty is a player who defenses don't like to go away from because he's a good three-point shooter. With Tony, it's a little bit different. Defenses do gamble more with him on the floor, and here's why. According to cleaningtheglass.com, Tony's only 6% of Tony's shots this year have been corner threes, and only 2% have been above the break threes. Not only that, so for one, he doesn't take a lot of threes. Number two, he's only shooting 33% from the corners, and according to Cleaning the Glass, he's 0% from above the break three. So he's not a 3-point threat. And I kind of feel like whoever the ball handler is, whether it's Manu or Rudy Gay, on the second unit, I feel like with Parker out there, it does get interesting to see with him out there, does it shrink the floor for those guys to create? Because I think that the defense will, back off Parker. They already do it when he was a starter, so they're going to do it again, I think, the bench players. And so I think that's the one thing to watch is when Tony does have the ball in his hands, how does it affect the offense? But I think, again, the biggest thing is that they're getting another playmaker in there, and they're getting a fresh Tony Parker. It looks like so far what we've seen here is that he's going in these games ready to score. He's averaging almost like 12 points, like I mentioned, 12.7 points, 5 assists. So he's going in there with that old Tony Parker mentality. I'm either going to get into the rim and get a shot, get a mid-range look off the screen if they leave me open, or I'm going to get an open shot for one of my teammates. And so that's the good thing you've seen is that he does a lot more than Patty can do as far as creativity for the offense. Our next question comes from at Greco Suave. He asks, the Spurs-Cavs game looked to be a turning point for San Antonio. But if you watch closely between Pop and LeBron's embrace, it appeared to be the ultimate recruiting ploy for San Antonio for the decision 2018. Do you feel the same? Unfortunately, I didn't see the whole Pop and LeBron embracing into the just because where I'm at the games, we always actually the media guys we like to and gals we all like to just kind of get back early to the locker room area because Pop goes on pretty quick after games and he doesn't really wait for us to get there sometimes. So Pop's a pretty quick guy in terms of going right from the game ending to doing his post game interview because obviously he probably wants to get out of there. So I didn't see Pop and LeBron embrace, but I, you know, in the past I've seen them after games. There's a very deep mutual respect between the two. You know, you've heard LeBron on the record talking about how much he respects Pop and looks up to him. You've seen Pop on the record how much he's really enjoyed watching LeBron's career so far. So there's obviously a mutual respect. And as far as the decision 2018, let's go ahead and get into that here. So, you know, before, as I mentioned, before I started recording, LaMarcus Aldridge was picked on Team LeBron for the 2018 All-Star team for one of LeBron's teams. So obviously everybody's going crazy on Twitter where they think that's a sign that LeBron wants to come to San Antonio in the summer when he's a free agent. And so let's look at some different avenues here about the decision 2018 because it is going to be a spectacle coming up this summer for LeBron James because let's look at his side first. You know, the Cavs are obviously going in the wrong direction. There's turmoil almost every game for them. They don't play any defense. So there's a lot of rumors coming out of their locker room that certain players don't like other certain players, et cetera. You know, and they don't look as deep as they have in the past when they've gotten to play Golden State over the last 3 years. So we don't know from what I'm seeing right now, it doesn't look like he's going to be back in Cleveland just based on everything that's happening, at least as of present, as of what we're seeing right now in the moment. There's always been that speculation that he's going to go to the Lakers. You know, they're obviously going to have some cap space if they can get rid of Luol Deng's contract. But, you know, even them, you know, are they going to track it? Unless he has other players already, like a Paul George, like a DeMarcus Cousins to go with him. Some other all-stars that are going to commit with him to go in the Lakers. I'm not sure if LeBron goes there just because of the whole situation I don't think the talent level's there if he doesn't get more all-stars to go with him. Then, of course, you have there's the Spurs who you, obviously, you know, like I mentioned, there's the mutual respect between Pop and LeBron. Maybe he wants to play for a great coach like Pop once in his career. He's always looked up to Pop. So maybe he does look at San Antonio. And then I've also seen some rumors about Houston as well. You know, maybe he goes and teams up with James Harden and Chris Paul. They'd have to move Ryan Anderson's contract and maybe a few others and let some players go. But they could also, like the Spurs, it'd be some cap hurdles, but they could make it happen if Houston really wanted to, if LeBron gave them a commitment. But let's just say that LeBron, you know, just because it's January, and let's just say that he did want to come to San Antonio. I kind of want to just get into this because a lot of people think that it's like a foregone conclusion that they can just sign him right away, the Spurs, if he did say yes. But I got to go through the cap ramifications, how it's not as easy as a lot of people are thinking that it is. And here's why. Two players that can really, really limit the Spurs' cap space this summer in case LeBron does want to come to San Antonio are Danny Green and Rudy Gay. They both have player options amounting up to about $18 million together. And, you know, we don't know yet. It's only January if Rudy and Danny are going to opt in or they're going to try to test free agency. In this first scenario, let's assume they opt in. So let's say that they stay on the books and Tony Parker takes off, you know, free agency because they he's at least his cap hold's gone, should I say? Brent Forbes is gone, Davis Bertans is gone, Kyle Anderson. There's another, you know, so all those players. So if that at this point the Spurs are only have opened up $634,000. That's not enough. You got to open up $35.3 million to sign LeBron at the max that he's at his level pace. So then let's say that the next move for the Spurs is they need to probably find a taker for Pau Gasol's contract, $16.6 million. From that point, for $16 million. So at that point the Spurs have opened up $16 million for LeBron. Still not enough. Then they're probably looking at moving to Patty Mills' contract. So if they can find a taker, then they have $27 million open. So maybe LeBron, you know, with the respect he has for the Spurs, maybe he takes an $8 million pay cut. I don't know. If he doesn't, then maybe they have to move Rudy Gay now. And then they'd open up to $35.3 million exactly. And so then you'd have a core team of Kawhi, Aldridge, LeBron, Manu Ginobili, Danny Green, Derek White, and DeJounte Murray at that point. But here's the biggest hurdle is that who's going to take the guys that you need to trade their contracts? You know, when Aldridge wanted to come to the Spurs, there were a lot more teams with open cap space. So like Atlanta at that time could easily absorb Thiago Splitter's contract. These days with teams not having that much cap space, it's hard to move a big contract just, you know, automatically, like on a whim, like if a team wanted to, somebody like Powell's contract or Mills's. And the only teams I'm seeing right now, they're going to have some sort of salary cap space are Chicago, Dallas, Sacramento, Phoenix, Indiana, Brooklyn, Atlanta, and maybe Philly. But yeah, obviously Philly's heading toward the playoffs, so they're probably going to try to look for going out of free agent as well themselves. So, you know, it's not just about finding a taker. It's also, you know, what is that team going to get for absorbing your contract that you don't want? You know, are you giving up a pick? Are you giving a young prospect, a player? And then those teams, you know, they're going to have cap space. Maybe they want to use that cap space. Maybe they have a free agent in mind that they want to sign, or maybe they want to extend one of their own players. So there's a lot of what ifs and hurdles that the Spurs would have to work through to get a LeBron James to San Antonio. Now, it does get a little bit easier if Green and Rudy Gay opted out of their deals, because then the Spurs go into free agency with $17.7 million. And if they could find a taker for Pau Gasol's contract, then all of a sudden they'd have $33.7 million to offer LeBron. And so at this point, you'd have a smaller team in terms of number of players that are kind of going to have an impact. So you'd have Kawhi, Aldridge, LeBron, Patty Mills at this point, Manu Ginobili, and Derek White, and DeJounte Murray. So all in all, you know, it's only January. This is still a long way away. But if the LeBron to Spurs rumors do heat up in the summertime when he becomes a free agent, I'm just letting you all know that it's not going to be as easy as in 2015 when the Spurs signed Aldridge to just move players on big deals like Power, Patty Mills, or Rudy Gay. Those deals are going to be a little bit tougher now because there aren't that many teams with cap space as there were back in 2015. So that's just, again, something to keep in mind for the summer when all these rumors do heat up with LeBron. Our next question comes from at BamZongato. They ask, Gasol is playing well, but it's uncertain that he can keep this level for the next two seasons. His contract may block a splash move of the Spurs next free agency. Now that the season is in the middle, do you think it was a good move to offer him this contract? You know, the Powell, obviously, from most general NBA, you know, writers, media people, the deal wasn't good. It was $48 million for 3 years on the surface. That doesn't look good, especially considering his age, considering, you know, against certain teams that you're going to play deep in the playoffs, like the Warriors, the Rockets, he can't play as many minutes because they go small ball. But, you know, like something that, you know, I'm not the one making the judgment. It's not my, I'm not Payne Powell. So from my perspective, no, I wouldn't have given him $16 million each season for the next 3 years. But, you know, that's the Spurs' decision. Maybe they didn't know what the market was. I know that he helped them out in a way by opting out of his deal initially, which is about $15 million or $16 million, to let them have a chance to sign Chris Paul before Paul got traded to Houston. So in a way, maybe it was like a favor of like, hey, you helped us out. Maybe we're going to kind of reward you with this kind of contract. I'm not sure. You know, I'm not going to speculate. You know, that's just stuff that you hear, you know, the rumors and stuff. Anyway, so the one thing about Powell's deal is that you're right in that it may be tough to move this coming summer if like they want to get a splashy free agent like LeBron. Like I just mentioned, there's not that many teams that are going to be willing to absorb a $60 million contract. And, you know, what are those teams going to want in return to taking in Powell for salary? You know, do they want a pick? Do they want a young player? That gets tough in negotiations. It's not as easy as I mentioned, like in 2015 with Splitter. But on the flip side, Powell's deal is really for 2 years, $32.8 million. And here's why. He's making $16 million this year, $16.8 million next year. And then in that final season, 2019-20 season, he's only making $16 million, but it's non-guaranteed. So the Spurs have the choice of choosing. They don't have to guarantee that last year of his deal. So it's really, realistically on paper, it's 2 years, $32.8 million. Again, maybe it was still too much for him. That a lot of people in general are going to say that was a bad deal. But again, we don't make the decisions. We don't run the Spurs' front office. That's their decision. That's Powell's agent who got that deal for him, helped him out with that. So that's a conversation for those parties. Let's move on to our next question from at 123 Huff. They ask, I had wrote something about how Joffrey LaVerna had grabbed a season high in rebounds. I think it was like eight or something like that. Anyway, he had asked me for this question, or she, I'm just going to say they, because I don't know, you know, I didn't see who this person was on Twitter. Anyway, they ask, think he's another Tiago Splitter. They're talking about Joffrey LaVerna. You know, numerically, I look at some of the stats. He does have some of the kind of similar stats to Tiago a little bit there. In terms of like body size and how he runs the floor, you know, north to south, I do see a lot of Splitter in him. But in terms of like passing ability, the angles he sees, I give him more of that, like that Boris Diaw edge. I remember in preseason, back to what I was saying, you know, in the preseason, a lot of people were comparing Joffrey to more of a Boris Diaw type of game. You know, he could shoot the three a little bit, he could spray the floor, he can make some really good passes, you know, definitely attacking the glass. And can kind of be kind of crafty with the ball. But then LaVerne had that that ankle injury early in the season. He's just never been able to crack the rotation. You see that he only plays, you know, when players are out or if it's like a blowout or something like that. So he just hasn't been able to find a place in the rotation. Pop's kind of kept the rotation in the front court to just Davis, LaMarcus, and Powell, and then like Kyle Anderson, Rudy Gay play small ball more often. So I just feel like I haven't had a full grasp of him just because he hasn't played as much this season. I don't think he will get a huge role either just because the Spurs already passed halfway through the season. More than halfway, and he still hasn't carved out a role for himself. So I don't think that he's ever gonna to become, especially as for more of a rotation player. I don't think he'll ever get that Tiago slot this season, should I say? Our last Spurs Twitter question comes from at Galvarez DC. They ask, how do I send a question like how's Rudy doing? So they were asking how to respond to questions on the Spurs cast. So good question, you know. So if you're on Twitter, all you do is you make a new tweet and you put hashtag Spurscast, and then you just write the question to us. You can send it to myself. You can just Just you can just put it on your own, and it'll and I'll see it because I always look up these hashtags first to make sure that everybody who used it gets responded to through this way. And you know, either the Project Spurs account will see it or the Spurscast account will see it. So back to the question: how's Rudy doing? You know, style wise, he has cornrows. The other day, he had some. Now him, Kawhi, and Brandon Paul have cornrows. That was at the Cavs game. He had cornrows for the first time. But as far as playing wise, you know, he's still out as of January 17th, which was 8 days ago. Pop said, you know, quote from Pop, still a couple weeks away. So, you know, Rudy's there. I go to all the home games and Rudy's there, you know, in the suit. He's just there kind of hanging out behind the bench. And I'm not sure, you know, the Spurs really haven't practiced or had shoot arounds because they've been on the road or they just had a really tough schedule so far. So we as the media don't really see him out there shooting around, you know his level of return to play. So right now the Spurs really haven't given an update. So it's kind of just, he's out weeks from what Pop says. Thank you again to everybody who sent questions using the hashtag Spurscast. Really appreciate those. Got to get into different areas of the Spurs there. Let's move on to our last segment, which is or the last segment I'm going to talk about, which is the Spurs' next three games before I record next week's episode. Next week, the Spurs their next three games, they play Philly on Friday, Sacramento Kings on Sunday, and then Denver on Tuesday. And these are all home games in San Antonio. So let's go ahead and go through the Philly game. The Sixers come to town Friday. The Sixers are 23-21, seventh in the East, 8-2 in their last 10 games. 109.1 points per 100 possessions offensively, which is sixth. 98.2 points per 100 possessions, which is defensively, which is third. And that's in the last 10 games again. So this is the one where I kind of had the most difficulty predicting as far as these next three games go, just because the Spurs just lost to Philly recently. But look at the context of how they lost. They were missing Tony. They were missing Manu. They were missing Kawhi. They did have Aldridge and Powell, and now in that game they were down 16 in the third quarter, but with 2:10 left, they were leading by 1 point. And obviously, some fans got upset because Pop went to the hack of Ben Simmons strategy, and then Simmons ended up making his free throws, and from there the Sixers took the lead and never looked back. So I mean, if the Spurs are missing, basically they were missing Tony in that game because Manu is out again on against the Sixers, and so is Rudy Gay, and so is Kawhi. The Spurs have already announced that. So from my thinking is, if the Spurs were right there of winning the game, they were within 2 minutes of winning the game against Philly without Tony, and now Tony's more comfortable off the bench. You know, you see DeJounte's a different DeJounte Murray than Philly saw. And also the Spurs are at home where they're really good. They've only lost three games. And their offense is actually clicking pretty well right now. I'm actually going to give this game to San Antonio. Now, I may be wrong just because, you know, I haven't been doing too well in these predictions, although I got last week's right. But I'm going to go ahead and take the Spurs just because of like those three factors that I mentioned there against the Sixers. On Sunday, the Spurs host the Kings, who are 14-33, 15th in the West, just trying to get the first pick in the draft. They're 2-8 in the last 10. Sacramento scoring 100.6 points per 100 and holding teams to 107.4, which is 26th and 19th offensively and defensively, which is not very good. So I have the Spurs in that one. I don't think it's going to be too tough for them, regardless if Pop sits some players. Then the Spurs host the Nuggets. On Tuesday, Nuggets are 24-23 on the season, which is eighth in the Western Conference. They're not doing well still. They're 4-6 in the last 10. The Nuggets are scoring 99.8 points per 100 and holding teams to 106.5 points per 100 in their last 10 games, which is 30th offensively. It's rare to see a Denver team that bad offensively and 17th defensively. You know, you saw the Spurs with Kawhi recently. They really blew out the Nuggets here in San Antonio. So I think they're going to do that again, even though Kawhi's not present. The Nuggets are kind of not in a good place right now, playing basketball wise. So I'm going to take the Spurs in that one. So I think the Spurs will go 3-0 in their next stretch before I record the Spurs cast episode 481, sometime next week. Thank you again for bearing with me on this solo Spurscast. You know, my voice has been in and out of this episode, and I've had allergies, so my throat's wanted to cough pretty much the entire episode. So I apologize again for some of those weird like vocal cord straining things going on in some of the cuts I had to make throughout the episode. Just a few reminders. Thank you again to those of you that sent questions using the hashtag Spurscast. If you want to send some for next week's episode, use the hashtag Spurscast. If you're on Twitter, follow us at Project Spurs, at @ATLeague_NBA, at the Spurscast, and at Project Spurs Network. Visit ProjectSpurs.com, analyzingtheleague.com, and ProjectSpurs.net. And again, if you're on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. I am Paul Garcia. Thank you again. Have a great day.